Hi, I'm Dr. Felicia Mebbin, and this is Health Services Unplugged. As you may have guessed from listening to other episodes of Health Services Unplugged, I love stories, including soap operas. I blame my mom for that one. She used to watch her soaps while she did her hair, especially during the summer. What's an 8-year-old to do? And I digress. Anyway, I ask guests about their favorite movies, TV shows, or books because I'm curious. I'm always on the lookout for exciting new experiences as told through stories. For example, the last movie I saw in the theater was Ex Machina. I knew the premise of the story, though I try to avoid reviews because I like to be surprised. I did not see several of the twists and turns in that movie coming. And the fact that it takes place in a house among three antagonists, and was still engaging and believable is a feat and was a great experience. I think the dilemmas we face around healthcare are also compelling, even when it's hard to translate them into a story. After all, if you were poor and elderly and relied on the Medicare program for health insurance and you had cancer, would you want policies that encourage your physician to give you cheap care that's low quality? Or would you want your physician to give you really expensive care that saves your life but can't be offered to everyone? Or would you want the care to be just right, payment policies that encourage the best balance of cost and quality to treat you and your family and friends and community? Whichever option you pick, this next study is for you. Meet Dr. Jeffrey Clough, a physician and researcher at Duke University School of Medicine. A recent issue of Health Affairs included an article by Dr. Clough and his colleagues called Why Variation in Payments for Medicare Beneficiary Oncology Service Suggests Room for Practice Level Improvements. I'll let you listen to him explain it to me and Mr. Fernando Alare Escuerdo, a public health graduate student at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health.
My name is Jeff Bob. I'm a telemedicine and a health services researcher. After completing my training at Duke, I went to Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services for about 3.5 years. That's actually when I did this work, working on alternative payment delivery models in healthcare. And now I'm back to Duke and the Duke Clinical Research Institute, where I'm spending half my time as a primary care physician and half my time as a health services researcher.
I'm Fernando Lariz. I am a PhD student at the University of Minnesota. I am a biomedical engineer and a health economist. I got both of my degrees, my engineering bachelor's and master's degree in Mexico City. I'm originally from Mexico, and this is my third year in the PhD at the University of Minnesota. What I'm focusing on here is health decision sciences.
Awesome. What's the motivation? Why this particular study?
Sure. So the study was conducted when I was at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, which was a center created as part of the Affordable Care Act and really given the flexibility to test new payment and delivery models in Medicare. At the time, I was looking into new models in oncology where there's tremendous stakeholder interest. One of the first things I wanted to do was understand the magnitude of the problem. And so this paper was really focused on a descriptive analysis to characterize the amount of variation that's occurring in the country, in the medical oncology space for services that have been commonly identified as services that may be inconsistently and sometimes maybe even inappropriately used by physicians and potentially solvable through financial and delivery models. So we did kind of give a quick jump to the punchline. We did find that there was wide variation at the physician practice level, suggesting that there may be opportunities for the types of reform that have been discussed. It was beyond the scope of the paper to try and identify the specific problems that are causing these variations or the solutions, but the paper did generate important evidence to suggest that this is, in fact, something that's worthwhile and potentially may be impactful.
Okay, so if you had some keywords, we're talking about physician practice, we're talking about cancer services, quality of care, and payments. How's that?
Right. Really, medical oncology physician practice, specifically in the services are chemotherapy, imaging, and hospitalizations, and yet in wide variation, which may signify quality.
Jeff, have you presented this at any conference or forum to like physicians or stakeholders?
So the only presentation today was when the article out Health Affairs, Health Briefing in Washington, D.C. at the National Academies Press Club. And so I briefly presented the results of the study there.
And what was the reaction of them? Like saying that there's like this wide variation?
The audience there was pretty broad. I think that many would not be necessarily surprised at this variation. In fact, this is part of the reason why so many stakeholders have been advocating for new financial delivery models in oncology, is that it's believed that there are potential opportunities for standardizing care. So many experts would probably view these findings as consistent with their beliefs, but nevertheless, it's first important to kind of validate those beliefs, but also have a sense of the magnitude as people are moving forward with new strategies, give a sense of what type of impact could conceivably be seen.
So why is it important to validate the beliefs?
Well, just to justify any, there's clearly a lot of time and expense to any sort of strategy to solve these problems. So for instance, Medicare is experimenting with a new payment model, the oncology care model, which could address a number of these issues, really designed to address a number of these issues. The application for that model is actually due this month from practices. So that's a real-world example of how these findings can and are being acted upon. But of course, knowledge of whether this opportunity really exists, it would be hard to justify, you know, both for payers and providers to feel justified in pursuing a new model like that.
So now that you have found variation in these oncology services, do you have an idea what would be the best end of the tail, or is it at the mean? Like when you want to think about standardizing these payments, what would the range in the distribution that would you think would be ideal to reduce uncertainty?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. And certainly, we don't expect that everything would be exactly the same, because there are always going to be underlying factors, clinical factors, patient preferences that will necessarily explain some variation. But one of the important aspects of our study is that we looked at variation at the practice level, so that you would always expect within practices across individual patients, they're going to have a variety of factors. You certainly wouldn't expect service used to be the same for every patient, but you would expect it to be a little more similar across practices. I think both determining the right overall level as well as the right level of variation is challenging for some of the categories, particularly for chemotherapy and imaging. We know that the services are absolutely appropriate in a number of situations. We certainly wouldn't expect that to go to zero. For inpatient stay, which are typically unplanned and undesired, most would probably be happy to see that to go to the lowest possible number. I think certainly a lot of research and kind of better understanding the real life experience and data and models, what we should have a better understanding of what's driving the underlying variation, which can help, you know, try and identify the right number, or maybe better explain the variation so that we can determine how much variation is actually warranted. I mean, I do think overall, in sort of the context of literature, a number of these services have been identified by professional societies and others as probably being fairly low value, but there probably is an amount of opportunity to reduce both absolute spending and total variation for many of these services.
So what's the implication here for someone who has cancer, or, you know, someone in the general public? Is there any connection, a direct connection to those folks who might be listening in?
Yeah, I think for them the key message is that the services you may receive and the recommendations may be different based on which physician you go to. And since it's hard, you know, to say what's right or wrong, it can occur for a variety of reasons. You know, you're often dealing with sort of gray zone of medicine where evidence isn't entirely clear. May have different beliefs or knowledge, et cetera. But what's really important is that patients really speak up, make sure they understand kind of lift the benefits of what's being offered. You know, they should feel empowered to get a second opinion or discuss any recommendations or understand what the alternatives are, because there are often a lot of different treatment options and different patterns. And also, something that's being more often recognized is the financial toxicity of cancer care, and it's often challenging for physicians to bring that into the conversation. So patients should be aware that different choices can result in markedly different costs, you know, both the payers and the patients themselves. And so they should feel encouraged to bring that up in their discussion with their doctors, and they can even take that into consideration, maybe not selecting a potentially low-value service.
So Fernando, does that jive with what you've been studying, decision sciences, what he just said?
Yes, for me it's very important. First thing is to actually know about what's the situation of the phenomenon you want to analyze, and then what you could do to actually improve it. So first stage is know like the status quo. In this case, there's variation. And then like, how would you set up a framework, let's say a decision analytic framework, to determine what would be the optimal level of variation and of what around what particular need. As you said, Jeff, like this, like zero variation is not neither optimal nor feasible, and probably like we would like high levels of payments, low levels of payments, but probably not somewhere around in the middle. And the key part is where would you land on that and that on that range that you can actually maximize benefit and reduce risks and obviously costs.
Mm-hmm. And you've also got the individual patient sort of decision process to incorporate cost, as Jeff was mentioning, which is not something that patients typically do think. I think they typically just want the best care, and they don't want to have to think about, you know, how much does this cost, especially when they have cancer, right? But that may be what we would like for people to do, at least a little bit. Is that part of what you were saying, Jeff?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there's no way right now for a patient to obtain information to know, for instance, if which doctor or which practice may tend to be a higher cost, higher utilizing practice. That may happen in the future. Certainly CMS and other payers are moving to transparency, particularly cost transparency in the system. I wouldn't be surprised if that information is available in the next few years. But in the meantime, again, just knowing that this is something that's been studied in other areas of healthcare, patients often aren't aware of how different recommendations or care can be depending on which providers they go to. So just knowing that there may be a benefit to kind of being a more effective consumer and really making sure that you understand what's behind the recommendations from your physicians and exploring alternatives, particularly if cost is a concern to you.
So Jeff, who is the key audience for this? And if you had those people in front of you right now, what would you want to say?
Yeah, I think it's still primarily physicians, oncologists who are considering these types of reforms, whether there's an opportunity for them to kind of change the way they're delivering care or take on risk, participate in one of these new financial models. As well as certainly the payers and other stakeholders that are engaged in that process. I think our study largely contributes to that conversation, which has been really dynamic in oncology, and it's really timely with kind of the new payment models that are coming out from CMS and other payers. So I think many of them wouldn't be surprised that these findings necessarily, at least the overall message, I think very few would have been able to guess the numbers that we've seen, and maybe even the relative magnitude of some of the categories. But I think there's a lot here to support what everybody has been looking for and been trying to do. There certainly are groups that kind of focus more on the opportunity for chemotherapy and imaging, and other ones that focus more on maybe practice level changes that will reduce unplanned inpatient stays. So we find some evidence for both, and I think the interesting findings that they weren't well correlated. So it does suggest there may be multiple different opportunities out there that are really independent. But I think there's something for almost all of the different stakeholders to find find in this analysis and to encourage continued work in this area.
And when you say stakeholders, you're referring to people who care about the quality of care, access to care, particularly in this area, right?
Right, right. And, you know, that tends to be, you know, physicians, physician groups, and payers and other health policy experts are the most vocal in this debate. But it clearly, you know, matters to patients. I think patients care a lot about quality and cost of cancer care. Sometimes harder to elicit that voice.
So let's shift gears here. Tell us a fun fact about yourself.
You know, I'm I have two young children, spend most time with them. I do like to do triathlon and fun races. So those are kind of my main activities. I'm not sure how fun that is.
Oh, cool. No, I'm a runner. I've done 7 marathons, so I can appreciate the triathlon thing.
Yeah.
So, Fernando, what about you?
Well, I'm certainly not a hardcore athlete, but I do like to work out. But for me, one of the fun things that have happened to me here in Minnesota, like, as you know, I'm from Mexico, is we certainly don't have this type of weather variation, at least not in Mexico City, like this hot and humid in the summer and slightly colder in the winter here in Minnesota. So there are some of these activities that I've been able to do here in Minnesota, such as ice fishing. So for me, it's like kind of a mind-blowing experience just to be out there at a lake, on top of a lake, just like waiting for a fish to catch on top of a frozen surface. So it's been an interesting type of activity this year. Or just go to a lake downtown in Minneapolis. We have at least 4 or 5 lakes, I believe, which in the winter, this has completely changed the lifestyle and people really engage the winter, at least for the beginning. So this is a fun experience that I have here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, that must be a pretty incredible sort of culture shift there.
Oh yeah, certainly. In a good way. I've liked a lot the way of life here in the north part of the country, which each season has a different way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Like differently shifts how you spend your time in different seasons.
Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for students who might be interested in doing this type of work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to get a grasp of, you know, what's happening from a quality perspective or, you know, delivery perspective, so that you're able to hone in on research questions and projects that are highly impactful. And I think to the extent that you can get, you know, applied experience in an organization, like certainly if you're thinking about a career kind of focused on delivery reform, payment reform, which is a big topic in health services, to actually to get that experience is extremely helpful to coming up kind of the research questions. And certainly, you know, and this is pretty generic, but clearly partnering with, you know, finding good mentors, good people to work with, is really critically in all aspects of research.
Thanks to Dr. Klo and Mr. Alard Escuergo. And thanks to you for listening in. You can join in with your comments and other feedback and find links to more about what we talked about, including to Dr. Klo's article at healthservicesunplugged.info. You can also give a review of the podcast on iTunes. Woo-woo! Your feedback, especially if you think this podcast is just right or headed in the right direction, will help boost our standings. Of course, we appreciate hearing from everyone. Health Services Unplugged is presented by Academy Health with support from Kaiser Permanente and produced by me, Dr. Felicia Mebbin, and executive producer, Dr. Imani Cheers, with music by Dr. Cheryl Mebbin. You can learn more about this project and the rest of Academy Health at academyhealth.org.